Now today we come to the second stage or second aspect of the Noble Eightfold Path. And this is Samyaksankalpa, as it is called in Sanskrit, or Samasankapo, as it is called in Pali. And this is usually translated as right resolve, as in our printed program, or right resolution. I shall have something to say a little later on about the correct translation of this term. With this stage, with the stage of Samyaksankalpa, we come to one of the most important questions, not to say problems, in the whole of the spiritual life. And this is the question of reason and emotion. We all know from our own experience that it is comparatively easy to understand intellectually or theoretically a religious or a philosophical teaching. It may be quite abstruse, it may be quite complex, it may even be intrinsically difficult, but with a bit of mental exertion, with a bit of systematic study, we usually can manage to understand without too much difficulty. But when we come to put that teaching, when we come to put that doctrine, that philosophy, that religion into practice, then we find that this is very much more difficult indeed. In this connection, there's an anecdote which I often relate. Some of you may not have heard it, illustrating this point from Buddhist history, from China, in fact. It appears that in ancient times in China, a number of Indian monks used to go from India to China to preach the doctrine. And it seems that at one period of Chinese history, there was a very pious Chinese emperor who was always very eager to welcome great sages and teachers from India. And one day it so happened that one of the greatest of the Indian teachers turned up in the capital of China, and the emperor, as soon as he heard the news, was very pleased indeed. He thought he'd have a wonderful philosophical discussion with this newly arrived teacher. So the teacher was invited to the palace, received with all pomp and ceremony and respect. And when all the formalities were over, the teacher and the emperor took their seats together, and the emperor put his first question. He said, "Tell me, what is the fundamental principle of Buddhism?" And he sat back to really to get it from the horse's mouth, as it were. So the teacher said, "Ceasing to do all evil, learning to do good, purifying the heart. This is the fundamental principle of Buddhism." So the emperor was rather taken aback. He'd heard all that before, you see. Usually we've heard it all before. So he said, "Is that all? Is this the fundamental principle of Buddhism?" So the teacher said, "Yes, that's all. Cease to do evil, learn to do good, purify the heart. It's as simple as that." But the emperor said, "But this is so simple, even a child of 3 can understand that." So the teacher said, "Yes, your majesty, that is true. Even a child of 3 can understand this." But he said, "Even an old man of 80 cannot put it into practice." So this little story illustrates this great difference. We find it very easy to understand. We can understand the Abhidharma, we can understand the Madhyamika, we can understand the Yogacara, we can understand Plato, we can understand Aristotle, understand the 4 Gospels, understand everything. But to put even a little of all that into practice, to make it operative in our lives, this we find very, very difficult indeed. you probably all know, you probably all remember the famous exclamation in this connection of St. Paul, who in one of his epistles says, succinctly, pretty much to the point, that which I would, that I do not. That which I would not, that I do. So he knows what he ought to do, but he's unable to do it. And that which he knows he should not do, that he cannot help doing. So again we see this tremendous, this terrible disparity between understanding and practice. And we may say that this is not exceptional. Not just a question of the Chinese emperor or St. Paul. We may say that all religious people find themselves at some time or other, and sometimes even for years together, in this quite terrible and tragic predicament. They know the truth rationally. They know it from A to Z and from Z back to A. They can talk about it, they can write books about it, they can give lectures about it, but they are unable to put it into practice. And this can be, for those who are sincere, a source of very great suffering. They feel as it were, well, I know this. I know it very, very well. I see it so clearly. But I'm unable to put it into practice. I'm unable to carry it out. It's as though there was some blind spot in themselves. It's as though there was some X factor which was obstructing their efforts all the time. No sooner do they lift themselves up a few inches than they slip back, or sometimes it seems a mile. So this is what happens. So what is the reason for this situation? Why does this happen? Why this terrible gulf? Why this terrible chasm between our theory and our practice, our understanding and our operation? Why are we, most of the time, most of us, unable to act in accordance with what we know is true and what we know is right? Why do we fail so miserably again and again and yet again? Now the answer to this question is to be sought, we may say, in the very depths of human nature. We say that we know something. But how do we know it? In what way do we know it? We know it with the conscious mind. We know it with the rational part of ourselves. We know it theoretically, intellectually, abstractly. But then we must recollect that man is not just his conscious mind. He's not just reason. He may like to think that, but he isn't just reason. There is another part of him, a part which is no less important than his reason, and which is perhaps a much larger part of him than he cares to think. And this other, this more important or no less important, this larger part, is made up of instinct, made up of emotion, made up of volition, and is, we may say, more unconscious than conscious. And this part, this wider, this deeper, this no less important part of ourselves, this is not touched at all by all our rational, our intellectual knowledge. This part, as it were, goes its own way. And usually, it goes its own way, dragging the mental part, still, of course, protesting, along with it. So this is what happens. It's obvious that we just cannot go against the emotions. The emotions are stronger than reason. So if we want to put into practice what we know to be right, what we know to be true, what we have to enlist, in one way or another, the cooperation of the emotions. We have to be able to tap those deeper sources within ourselves and harness them also to the religious, to the spiritual life, so that we may implement what we know to be right and true. Only then shall we be able to put what we know into actual practice. And this, we may say, in a sense, is the central problem, for most people at least, of the spiritual life, to find emotional equivalents for our intellectual understanding. Let me repeat that. To find emotional equivalents for our intellectual understanding. And until we do that, until we have done that, no further spiritual progress is possible.